straight out of high school, I studied traditional Chinese medicine at university for no other reason that I didn't get the marks that I wanted to get into other more preferential subjects. But also my uncle was one of the first traditional Chinese medicine practitioners here in Australia. And it had always been an area of interest for me. Don't ask me how or why, but it had kind of always been in the background somewhere.
Welcome to the Geopaths Podcast, an audio experience to scratch your cultural curiosity itch with many different expat lens themed shows. Our other shows so far have included topics like books and our online activities as we change countries. We're also adding on an expat podcaster show as of International Podcast Day on September 29th/30th, depending on where you are in the world. In this episode, I am pleased to welcome Cameron, host of the Mandarin by Mistake podcast. Cam is an Australian man learning Mandarin Chinese for business purposes. This is a bit of a cheat because Cam and I did this interview on YouTube a few weeks ago. But in the rebranding of the Geopets podcast, I just cannot figure out where to put these language learning conversations. So the solution is I'm going to put them everywhere. So you can still see the actual interview on the Changing Scripts YouTube site, and you can also hear it here in this podcast. As you may guess from the name of Cam's podcast, Mandarin by Mistake, he focuses on mistakes that he makes when learning Chinese. I love it. He even has a section of the podcast dedicated to the mistake of the week. What he emphasizes by doing this is that practicing a lot is the important part, not being perfect. And I think that is something that is lost sometimes in the language learning community when we focus on quantity and perfection of being able to use a language. This interview is part one of two in an accountability series that we're starting and that I hope to have with more folks going forward on the Changing Scripts show. So this is part one, where we're asking Cam five different questions that he himself has created. Thank you. I love it when I don't have to do a lot of the work. And then in 6 months' time, we will return to the same five questions, and he will answer them again. And we'll see if the pressure of answering his own questions again and again motivates him to learn Mandarin Chinese on a more consistent basis. Three quick things before we get to the interview with Cameron. A special thanks to Damon Castillo for letting us use his music in the Geopets podcast. This month, we're using Sometime Guy from the Mess of Me album. DamonCastillo.com is where you can find all his information. The Geopets podcast newsletter number 8 is out now, and you can actually go to StephFuccio.com to sign up and take a look at the new podcast newsletter. We have behind the mic information as well as podcast episode recommendations that are not my own creations. Believe it or not, there are more than just the podcast that I create out in the world. Gasp, I know. And there's so much more in there. Please do go check it out. If listening to podcasts makes you think about making your own podcast, I want to help. You can have a free month of Podbean hosting service. That's who I use for the Geopets podcast, by using this promo code podbean.com/virtual expats. Don't forget the S. If you are an expat, I am actually doing a beginning expat podcasters, let's just call it a resource dump or workshop, next week on September 25th and 27th. It's only going to be one of those days for you, but it'll be two for me since I'm doing them. Get more info and sign up at stephfuccio.com. If you don't want to record your voice but need a voice, I am selling mine. If you or anyone you know, including your company, needs a voiceover talent, please do request me at voices.com/actors/Steph Puccio. If you didn't write all of this information down, don't you worry about that. Go to stephfuccio.com. If you have any comments or questions about this episode or any of the Geopets episode, you can find me at stephfuccio. STEPHFUCCIO everywhere online. That is my handle everywhere. It's also my Gmail account, so you can email me if you wish. Let's get to Cameron's language learning story. Yay! Okay, welcome to the revival of the Changing Scripts YouTube channel, possibly podcast. I don't know where this is going to end up. Hey, Cam, how are you?
I am Excellent, Steph. How are you?
I'm good. The coffee's good. We're fine. Yeah. So I'm in Shanghai, China, and it is about a little after 9 a.m. Where are you and what time is it?
I am in Melbourne, Australia, and it is a little after 11 a.m.
We're going to do a slightly different type of video for this, and I'm excited that Cam came up with this idea. We're going to do a before and after type of thing. Why are you laughing? It was your idea. It was a great idea.
There we go. I'll take the credit. No problem.
So before and after. So Cam's been learning Mandarin Chinese for how long now?
Around 6-7 months now.
6-7 months. And so we're going to snapshot right now with 5 questions that he created. I love it when I don't have to do the work. And then 6 months from now, we're going to come back and ask him the same questions, and the study pressure will be on during those 6 months. Do you think you can handle it?
I think I can. I'm prepared. I'm prepared to be prepared to handle it.
Okay. Let's dive in. Question number one. What are you currently spending your language learning time on? Including what tasks and how much time and what goal? Wow, your questions are hard, man. Let's do them one at a time. What are you currently spending your language learning time on?
90% of my time at the moment is spent using an app called Drops, which I think we've spoken about this offline. It's my favorite kind of way of learning, and it's a little bit of everything. I'm a very visual learner. So the app has has audio, has some pretty pictures in there, and has the characters, some pinyin, and the English. So that is the basis of 90% of my learning at the moment.
So part of why I wanted to get this back to a YouTube channel is all the visualness of the things we're talking about in the podcast don't make it onto the podcast because it's audio, right? So do you have your phone nearby?
Yes. Let me grab it. Yes, it's right here.
Can you get to drop so we can skip over all the stuff you don't want us to see?
I mean, hang on, let me just back it up. Oh, there you go. Actually, straight into it.
Oh, closer.
So this is. I'll actually just wind it back. Let's see.
Yeah.
Quit. Okay.
Oh,
so
that's nice.
Kind of where I'm at. So this is drops. That's an essential globetrotter, if I'm reading in the mirror correctly.
You are.
Then you also have all these different categories down here. So you can kind of pick and choose what you want to study on any particular day and head on in. So it's got a ton of categories. And to give you an example.
你叫什么名字? What is your name? 你叫什么名字? Yeah.
Yeah, so then you go, so you're going to go, okay, yeah, I want to learn that one. Let's drag it down there. 你叫什么名字? And it keeps going, and then it'll take you through, what is your name? And I don't know which one it was. 你叫什么名字? Oh, I got it right. And so it keeps repeating the audio, gives you pretty pictures. Oh, walking, but. I am sick.
Oh. Uh-oh. No. Right.
So it gives you the a tick if it's right. It gives you the cross if it's wrong.
Wrong. Wow.
This is stop. Don't go any further.
Yeah.
I can't remember if that was right or wrong. So let's just tick it. Hey, I got it right.
Yay.
So we take care. So it gives you, it's a really good way for me of learning because it's kind of a bit of everything. So it gives you all the different options. You can choose from lots of different categories on what you want to learn on that day, whether it's kind of sightseeing words or whether it's food, whether it's shopping or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So and for someone like me, I've got just a touch of learning ADD. So you can kind of jump around a bit, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm. And you spend an hour a day on the app?
I'm spending about 45, half hour to 45 minutes on the app.
That's
and
nice.
Yeah, well, it's kind of easy because you just pick it up. You got a spare 5 minutes. I've I've tried really hard to stop myself from, if I'm waiting in line for a coffee or if I'm waiting somewhere to go Instagram or Facebook, as you tend to do, and go actually the app instead. And so you kind of you're able to build up this time over the day, which is great. The other time I'm spending is I purchased a program a little while ago called Foreign Language Road Running by a guy called Moses McCormick, who is kind of he's pretty ridiculous when it comes to learning languages. He has a great intermediate level across quite a variety of languages, a ton of them. But his specialty is Mandarin Chinese, and his program's all about learning effectively just parroting phrases with a view to being able to speak to people in real life. So that's the other part of my learning, and that's 90% of my problem.
Is that it? Okay.
That's the one.
I'm trying to make use of the visualness of YouTube.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, this is it. And if anyone's interested, I'm not sure how, not that it's not ethical, but it's not great for people, but he goes around and he actually has a hidden camera on him when he goes and talks to people on the street, and he puts these videos up on YouTube.
Oh, that's cool.
You watch him walk into a restaurant and he'll talk to someone in Chinese, then in Korean, then in Japanese, and pick a language, then in Russian, then in Italian or whatever it might be. And it's a really cool process.
Wow, that's really affordable too, $40.
I was going to say, the other part is it's not expensive.
Wow.
And this first course that you're looking at there is 8 weeks. I bought it a little while ago. I got a couple of weeks in, got busy, started all over again, and I'm currently in week two.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about going out and talking to people in real life, which is kind of 90% of my battle as far as trying to learn the language goes. Is actually, you know, like what you meant, what you know, what I want to do is to be speaking to people.
Right. Right. That's very, very cool. Yeah. Cause I heard on your podcast that you were talking about the FLR method, and the first time you mentioned it, you said the full thing, but then I kind of just was starting to listen to the other stuff that you were talking about and I forgot to look it up. So I'm really glad that you brought that up again. That's really cool. How did you hear about that?
I think I was on one of those deep dives on YouTube one day when you get lost in a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And I came across one of his, I was looking up something to do with Mandarin. I came across one of his videos and he was in a restaurant and he spoke, I think, had conversations in 8 languages.
What?
All in like a 10-minute kind of window. They're like, come over here and talk. Come over here and talk to him. And so people were just coming up with all these different languages, Spanish and Chinese, Korean, Japanese, Greek. And I was like, this is just ridiculous.
Wow.
And as you do, I then watched video after video after video, and it came around that Chinese was his, like he can hold a good conversation in a lot of other languages, but Chinese is his specialty. And I thought, oh, I'll look further into it.
Right.
And it's all about getting you to talk. So I thought that's probably not a bad place to go. And like you said, the cost is
really good. Yeah. Yeah. Especially since a lot of apps these days, language apps specifically, they'll have a free version, but then you hit a very real wall pretty quickly and you have to end up paying $3, $4, or $5 or more.
I should disclose with Drops, I have the premium version, which I believe, I forget how much it was. It might have been $50 for the year for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Again, it's kind of a reasonable amount. The limitation with the free version is just one of time. So you have 15 minutes a day maximum in total.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, if it's a supplementary tool to something else, it's probably all right.
Yeah.
If it's your main tool, like I'm using it, 15 minutes can be limiting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've gotten spoiled with free apps, but honestly, people put their hard-earned time into making them, so we might as well start paying. Yeah.
Do you know, I actually think, I'm not sure if it's, I'm assuming there's some kind of psychological basis to it, but I find I put more emphasis and actually use things more when I pay for them.
Oh, that is a really good point I hadn't thought about. Yeah, it's true, because the apps that I pay for, I move to either my first or second screen on my phone, whereas yes. The ones that I don't pay for, I even forget to drag them on the screen at all. So, yeah.
Yes. Can I say I'm looking at the first screen on my phone?
Yeah.
There's four apps that I paid for.
Yeah.
That's and then email and stuff. So it's all the important stuff.
Really good point. Oh, here's a good time for me to say to the listeners/viewers, whatever this ends up being, that we're not being sponsored by anybody at all. These are just tools that we've found useful. Disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer.
Disclaimer. But feel free. Okay. Just to me if there's anyone out there.
Oh, I'm not saying I would reject sponsorship from the right source. I'm just saying that as far as this video goes, no money has been exchanged. Okay, number two, what is your favorite study tool? I think you explained that one already. Hold on. Yeah, what is your favorite study tool right now? What tools do you feel best suit your style of learning?
Yeah, I probably did explain that. Drops is by far my favorite study tool. Like I said, I'm very much a visual learner. Mm-hmm. A visual learner. I find that if I open up a textbook, I don't fall asleep straight away, but it's pretty close. It's pretty close to it. Like, it's just, I think I've got scarring from high school or something like that. I open it up and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. So, definitely having some of that interactiveness. I'm not sure that's the word. That definitely helps out.
It does. And the pictures are nicer. The sounds are right there as opposed to having to get audio ready. Yeah. No, apps are beautiful.
I have had to check occasionally with Plico, you know, as far as pronunciation goes or the tones, making sure things are correct. But again, it's got the audio there. It's got kind of everything you need.
Yeah. Yeah, Plico. Oh, you've just hit on the one that I love the most. Pleco's just a for the viewers. Pleco's just a online dictionary, but just is so the wrong word for it, right?
it's like just an online everything.
The master of all. It's an online dictionary that it has like everything you can think of. It has the sound. Yeah, you've got the characters, you've got like sample sentences, you can dig into the strokes. I mean, it has so much stuff in it. I love the strokes thingy. Check this out, guys.
Yeah, the stroke order.
I love that. See, I went through a phase where I was making my flashcards and I'm writing a lot, at least one time, but I was making many flashcards one time. And I really loved the stroke order, but it sounds like because of your aversion to textbooks that you didn't go to a tactile place yet.
I went through a period of maybe 3 or 4 weeks of just wanting to write or do practice the characters, and I think we're probably on a similar page. So I find it a really meditative practice where you can sit down and. There's something very romantic about doing the stroke, almost like that calligraphy type of process.
Yeah.
And I went through and I got quite into that for a bit and then as quickly as it came about, it left.
Yeah.
And I kind of moved on. But
I still
delve, and part of Drops does have a Hunza kind of section to it.
Yeah.
And the only I'll pop back in is the only, so it has this, where we got, you can't, the radicals here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's got this foundation kind of area, which has character, and so it does have stroke practice in there, and so you can go through that.
Yay.
Which is, yeah, it's actually really cool as well. So I have a, so that's probably a smaller part of my want at the moment, but it's still very, I still find it a really cool practice.
Well, and that's a big thing to keep in mind is your why and my why are very different. Mine was, I don't know, was or is one of those time. reading, which is very, very connected to writing, and yours is more of speaking. So it makes more sense that you would spend more time on the audio than I would.
Yeah.
Let's move on to number three. What are your expectations from learning Chinese in 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, and 2 years? Wow.
So I probably think about this stuff more than I should. I think a lot of people are the same, but the short term, that 3 and 6 months, like mm-hmm. especially from now going mm-hmm. forward, 3 months is being able to just converse and
yeah.
on a fairly basic level. And I think that's not too much of a stretch. Kind of 6 months is just effectively a little bit more of an advanced
mm-hmm.
version of that, as far as being able to converse and being able to hold decent conversations mm-hmm. with people. And 1 to 2 years is more so, and it might tie into one of the questions for later on, but it's mm-hmm. being able to use Chinese in a far more practical sense, as far as whether it's business or really mm-hmm. I do want to go fairly deep long term with China, especially Mandarin,
right?
And I think that's that just continually kind of pushing the boundaries and pushing it deeper and deeper and seeing how far I can go, because there's so much, and the more you learn, kind of the more you uncover. And you realize, oh, I know nothing. There's just so much more. A little deeper. And it's kind of like, it feels like an archaeological dig yeah. where you're just uncovering the very tip of the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a guest on the podcast who said that it's pretty much a lifelong commitment. It's like you're marrying the language, because you really have to commit to constantly keeping the relationship going and constantly learning and working on it.
Oh, I think that's agree 100%. It's funny because I've attempted to learn in previous life both Korean and Cantonese.
Yeah,
and they both seem obviously Cantonese being very, very much a colloquial spoken language, mm-hmm. And Korean felt that way to me as well. You know, you can learn to read Korean in a day, which is that's super easy.
Mm-hmm.
The speaking element. They're a bit harder, but they both seem much more kind of like a shorter term commitment
yeah.
than Chinese. And it's, I find every day where I go a little bit deeper, I'm like, oh man,
yeah.
which is, it's kind of disheartening, but it's kind of really exciting all at the same time, because you just realize there's so much more than you can possibly even comprehend.
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. It's so true. I'm semi on a accidental study pause, but I live in China, so I see the language a lot. And yesterday I ordered 4 things from the grocery store and I got 3 of them. And I was staring at the receipt going, here we go. It was like carrots, onions, celery, and bananas. And the only one I knew from the HSK materials I did last year was bananas. So I was like, okay, that one's here. Now, what are these other three?
What are the other ones?
What are the other ones? And I like playing with the Hunza characters. So I was trying to figure out from the characters which one might be which one. Because sometimes things look like it. I know native speakers say, nah, you just got to memorize them. But sometimes you can figure it out. And yes. I did well with the celery had, I think it was the celery, had the sai, which is like the vegetable radical in there somewhere. And that makes sense because it looks the most green and vegetable-y, I don't know. And then an onion had white by as one of the, in very bad tones, and is one of the components of the word. And so I was like, oh my gosh, okay, now I need to turn to Pleco. But it was fun to play with that. Even though I was frustrated, I'm like, I should probably tell them soon that they didn't deliver my damn bananas, but but I really want to stare at this and kind of try to figure it out. So there's things like that.
I find myself doing similar things. And I know people, obviously, you just got to learn them. You've got to memorize yeah. these. But I still look at it and kind of go,
yeah.
That does look like, well, it's, I think it's horse.
Yeah.
I think, and I'm like, it does look like a horse. Like
it does.
There's certain visuals and you try and play around with that. And then after 30 seconds, all right, better look that one up.
Yeah. Well, the more you learn, the more you realize that the newer words are like compounds of the older words, which are the older characters, and they have semantic meaning, and the more so in traditional than simplified, but still there's nuggets of stuff in there that are familiar, which, yeah.
Well, that's actually one of the other things is because on drops, you can choose between traditional and simplified.
Yeah.
For the characters, and I've chosen traditional, mainly because I want to circle back around at a later stage and learn Cantonese. So it's which obviously the traditional is used more, mm-hmm. and that's so I'm not sure how much I'm shooting myself in the foot.
No,
but it feels like a really cool process though to go mm-hmm. through as far as learning that, and you do I know like 0.01 of a percent about anything about characters at this point, but it does feel like you can start to, like you said, piece them together and kind mm-hmm. of recognize parts and start to get an idea before you know fully what the word means.
And there's more meaning in the traditional characters because the simplified have been reduced so much that sometimes you can't tell what it was. So you're actually helping yourself out. And to be honest, the only reason you would really need Mandarin simplified is if you were talking about reading and writing stuff in Mandarin Chinese. I'm sorry, in mainland China is what I meant mainland to say. China, there. Yeah. Mainland China.
Because everyone else uses traditional.
Yep. Absolutely. And it's supposed to be easier to go from traditional to simplified than going from simplified to traditional. Yep.
That would make sense. And that's actually one of the really it's kind of annoying. But there's so much that you, so much that is hard to go. Okay, so what countries do people speak Mandarin or a variation of Mandarin Chinese in? Who uses the simplified, the traditional characters? What are the there's so many different variations and permutations. It's incredible.
It is. Simplified is only mainland China. Everywhere else that uses Chinese uses traditional. So that part's easy, but the variations are crazy. And I'm imagining this is what my students must have felt like learning English and going, well, which English? And wait, not only are there the different kinds from different countries that use it a lot, but then you've got dialects and slang and all this kind of stuff. And that so exists everywhere that Chinese exists too.
It's actually really funny because being obviously Australian, we use British English for nearly everything, and we don't think that we have much of an accent or speak fast.
Ha! Sorry.
until you speak to someone who is not a native English speaker,
yeah,
like, you just slow it down a little bit for me. What does this word mean? Why do you say mate so often? What is going on? What does this? And then when you start to actually assess it, you're like, okay, yeah, maybe we do have our own, special place in that world.
I have to say, I think the Australian accent is clearer than like, for example, like Northern England. I think some of those accents up in the north are very distinct to that area.
I think it's a lot of this problem with Australia is the slang. And the speed at which we
and the abbreviations, shortening so many words is hard, even for me. Yeah, I have to think, okay, what could that be in its fullest form?
If we can shorten a word or add a Y to the end of it, we will. Anything we can do with that.
It's so true. And to be quite honest, in English, I have fun with this. When I talk to people who use different forms of English, I have fun with it. But in Mandarin Chinese, I'm sort of like, what are you doing? Why is that happening? In Shanghai, there's people from all over the country that come in. It's a migrant city. And I'm just like, I think I have one transaction down. I can do one simple exchange. And then it just goes boom. Because you're from a place I don't know your accent. I can't figure out the words that you're saying or where the words even are. This is not happening.
And I think that's one of the big hurdles to overcome. Like because I'm obviously focused on speaking is you go and talk to someone and you get that the kind of the you know when you've got a Mac and you get the white screen of death.
Yeah,
that's what I get from people. Yeah. It's the yeah. they're just the blank face of death when you yeah. say something to them. They kind of just go.
It's hard. Yeah.
And you start to question. You go, hang on, did I get that right? I'm pretty sure I was. And then you, and instead of perceiving, my default response is English. It's just, hey, I'm having trouble with my effect. My default response is just to go,
yeah,
all right, and talking, because most people here speak a variation of English, no matter where they're from. So it's that's a really hard hurdle to overcome as well.
It is. And the only way I've sort of gotten around it is by constantly asking the question a few different, because it's usually a question that I'm asking. So for me, it's like repeating it a few different times, trying out different words, slowing down or speeding up, depending on how different their accent is than I'm used to, because maybe I'm saying it too slow and they're used to it being fast. I don't know. And then I whip out like Google Translate or Pleco and I try to do the written version, because that is the one connector of all the languages, of all the dialects, of all the accents, of all that stuff. So then I try to do that.
That's a good point. What's funny, because I remember there's a Chinese teacher who in based out of Hong Kong, Cecilia Gamsberg, who I've had some of her material before, and she's fantastic. And one of her best pieces of advice was, in the beginning, only ask questions that you know the answer to,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of makes sense, because then you know.
Yeah.
And that's similar to that FLR method, is a lot of the questions that you're asking, all those phrases you're learning, you learn the question and the answer. So you've kind of got both. So you ask a question, you, when they say something back, you know what they're going to say, so you're prepared to go over the next step.
Exactly.
But it's still that case of when you ask a question and you get, oh bugger, do I have to speed it up? Yeah, slow it down. Am I pronouncing it correctly? Are my tones anywhere close to?
Nah. Sometimes they're just not expecting it from you. I mean, they're just not expecting it from someone that doesn't look like them. And so you just keep going. If you know the possible answers, like if it's left or right, like if it's a direction thingy, then start saying the answers. Like, what is it? Jo guai shima. What is left? Jo guai ma, yo guai ma. Like, just try to come out with some of the answers and just kind of keep going, because this really distracts people. They really think that most people can't speak Chinese.
I think this, especially in Australia.
Yeah.
Distracts people. A guy I play basketball with is from Taiwan, and we had a very brief conversation in Chinese the other day, and he's just looking at me, and we're good friends, he's like, what? And I'm like, hang on, is that, did I say it? He goes, no, you said it right. He goes, it just looks wrong coming from you.
Oh my gosh.
It's not expected. It's just kind of going, I just can't wrap my head around this, that you're this kind of white person in Australia speaking to me in Chinese. It just seems so out of place.
Yeah.
So I can imagine other people who aren't expecting it, kind of like, what planet are you from?
Yeah. But I had a similar reaction in a hostel like 10, 15 years ago, a long time ago. Where I met an Italian woman, and we were in Budapest, Hungary, and she was trying to get work, and she knew Hungarian, and she switched from English with me with a strong Italian accent to answering the phone from somebody that was calling her about a job, because she was like, oh my God, this is him. And she switches to Hungarian, and I'm just like, disconnect. Wait, how many languages can you just do this with? And it wasn't so much, it didn't look like she could speak that language, but it was just so weird to hear her accents change so quickly.
Yes.
And it was a little bit disconcerting and, you know, language jealousy.
That's language jealousy.
Yeah. It's so weird.
I had that yesterday. I think I've spoken on the podcast before about the hairdresser I go to I actually found out yesterday, he's from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But speaks Mandarin. Cantonese, obviously, perfect English, and I think he speaks a couple of other languages as well on the slide. Very unassuming,
mm-hmm.
but he switches seamlessly between Cantonese and Mandarin depending upon who walks into the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I just experienced the most insane job for no other. I mean, he's Chinese. He should. I know he's going to speak one of them really well.
Right.
But the fact that that seamless transition, I'm like, oh man, that's fantastic.
And they are different languages. So it is,
yes.
It is learning to get to both that level in both of them. Oh my goodness.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Language delicacy.
It reminds me of one of my favorite movies, True Lies. Mm-hmm. I know he doesn't speak this language in real life, but at the very start of the movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he enters this party that's going on and he speaks to a guy in Arabic, but underneath it, it has in subtitles, perfect Arabic that he's speaking to the guy. I'm kind of like, that's how, I'm assuming that's how every language learner wants to be received, is that whenever you just break out a language to someone, they're going to be like, oh my God, that's perfect. Well done.
That's funny. See, I would be happy with just them not even acknowledging that it was difficult for them to keep the conversation going. That's my goal. Although it's not my goal. My goal is to be able to just pull up a web page and just to be able to navigate it without 700 yoga breaths and be able to, okay, I know exactly what's in front of me. I can read this. This looks like a good article, and actually do a deep dive into someone's, like, not opinion piece, but I would really like to read perspectives from people whose first language was Mandarin Chinese on different things that are happening in the world, different books, different movies, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'd love to read that perspective.
Yes, I think that's one of those ones where you're looking, it's like you almost want to be just be able to communicate at that level.
Yeah.
Whether it's reading that page or having a conversation with someone, yeah, or doing whatever it is you want to do, just at a standard level.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because I mean, when I, the limited ability to speak in other languages, when I'm speaking to different people, I speak to them. And so I'm thinking people that are bilingual in Mandarin and in English, when they're speaking to me about these things that I'm interested in, they're probably prefacing it like, here's what you can understand. Here's what you know. I'm speaking to you. And I want to kind of eavesdrop on how they're talking to each other about these things. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I want to hear, like, yeah. Bring it
for the white woman over here who we don't know if she can speak Chinese or not, or how well she can speak. So it's this is what we're going to give you.
Yeah. And again, I do that with, I mean, I talk to who I'm talking to too. So it's not like it's a manipulative thing. I just want to be a cultural fly on the wall and read the things that they're saying to each other, because it feels kind of more truthful than when it's being translated and positioned to somebody who's outside the culture. So I'd love to have that kind of view.
I certainly understand that.
Number four. Where do you see yourself taking your Chinese studies in the future? So I'm guessing since your last question was going up to 2 years, let's go 10 years into the future.
10 years in, wow. I do want to go deep with Chinese. And it's funny. It's one thing straight out of high school, I studied traditional Chinese medicine at university.
Oh.
And for no other reason that I didn't get the marks that I wanted to get into other mm-hmm. more preferential subjects, but also my uncle was one of the first traditional Chinese medicine practitioners here in Australia.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
And it had always been an area of interest for me. Don't ask me how or why, but it had kind of always been in the background somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually learned Mandarin as a part of that. We learned obviously about the culture, about a bit of history, in addition to it was herbal medicine, not acupuncture at the time. So it was also right. Herbal medicine. And so I kind of getting that level of kind of understanding then, and that was frighteningly 21 years ago. It's a long time ago. And I've dabbled in Chinese ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like I do want to take it kind of as deep as I possibly can. And I think that's more so once you, because I probably think about this more than I should, as opposed to just going and doing the work. But
mm-hmm.
once you reach a level of fluency, mm-hmm. as far as being able to converse and being able to, you know, to read and write at a basic at a kind of standard level, that fluency where you can navigate your way, say, throughout life, whether it's be reading a blog post or having a conversation with a native Chinese speaker, then what's the next level of how deep do you want to go after that? And that's mm-hmm. That's probably the harder part where I won't know until I get to that point. But I do know that I want to go as deep into that as I possibly can.
Would you do TCM, traditional Chinese medicine? Would you do TCM as like a side thing, or would you switch careers completely?
It was a 4-year course, and I did 2 years before I switched to marketing. Mm-hmm. Just a slight career change there. But no, I have thought about going back. I haven't never reached a conclusion on that. It's kind of like it's a point in the future, but I like the idea of it. Yeah. I'm not sure how committed I would be, but I do think in some way, at the moment, I have clients of mine in business who are Chinese. Mm-hmm. So we have quite a few at the moment, and those who, they've spoken to me, and part of the reason I started by change from Cantonese to Mandarin was for work, for a business, mm-hmm. business opportunities in the future. So I think there's scope for that. But also the other part of me is I do love the Chinese classics and history and calligraphy and that side of things. And I think that's kind of that's an underlying theme that keeps running through, where I'm like, okay, that would be something to delve into mm-hmm. once you get that fluency part down. So, but if I ever say fluency part, I kind of mean just being able to interact on a daily basis using Chinese. That's my idea of fluency.
Yeah. That's a pretty reasonable idea of fluency.
Well, I think you kind of, I'd love for those, the brackets, the perfect Chinese to pop up in everyone's mind whenever I speak to them, but I don't think it's that realistic, and I'm not sure I care that much about people going, wow, you sound just like a whatever. As long as they can understand you and you can understand them and whatever else, I think that's exactly. Probably the idea of fluency.
That is. I mean, at some point, even in English, there are subjects I don't know about, and I have to ask people questions to understand what they're saying. So I imagine in a second language, when I got to a certain level of fluency, I still wouldn't know everything that people would be talking about in that language. So at a certain point, you'd have to have some really good questions to get to.
I think it's one of those funny ones where I have to catch myself every now and then and stop trying to be perfect at everything. Mm. So I've got lots of interests. Chinese is one of them. Mm-hmm. And you've got to, it can be so detrimental to try and be perfect at all of them, because you're just going to destroy your own progress by going, okay, I can't move on until I do this. And I think the name escapes me, but it was a guest on your podcast regarding fluency over accuracy.
Oh,
as far as that term goes, and I think that's one of the big ones that always sticks in my mind. As far as and a good example is there's so many migrants here in Australia, whether they're Chinese or from another country, and they all use English regardless of how broken it is to get around. And no one they talk to you in English, and you kind of go, you kind of assume, you go, okay, that's fine. And no one sits there and goes, wow, your English really isn't good. I can't understand everything that you're saying, so I'm not going to interact with you. But it's learning the other way. You just kind of assume, you're like, oh, it has to be perfect before I can start talking to people.
Yeah. It's easy to overcome. Yeah. Well, and so much going on in my brain. Because there are some people in the U.S. who would stop and say, I just can't understand your funny accent, or I just can't understand. Why don't you just learn it better? Oh. There are people that would stop and say that. But I think the majority of people would roll with whatever was being said.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, especially when you take a lot of a lot of people who come here, they speak their native language. They speak potentially another language mm-hmm. as well, plus English at a broken or intermediate level. So they're doing a whole lot better than all of us
right.
natives who speak just yeah. English.
Yeah. I loved it when the English teachers in the language centers that I worked in would be like, oh, they're just not very smart, blah, blah, blah. Like when they were teaching a beginner class, and I'm like, hey, they, or not a beginner, like a elementary class where they could kind of get the ideas out, but they weren't really polished or deep yet. And I'm like, they're doing that in their second language.
That's it.
Most of us are monolingual. They're already far ahead of us. Right. And we had adults yeah, coming in who were doctors and lawyers and had all these professions. And I'm like, not only can they speak their first language well, but they're proficient and skillful at it. And then they're coming in and learning this. I'm like, nope, my hat goes off to them.
That's it. You got to give them points for effort.
Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah. And putting themselves through that after they got to a certain level of proficiency and skill to, I mean, it's a vulnerable place to come and learn a language and to put yourself through that and be a child again in another language is hard.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, if you, there is a really, really good acupuncturist in Shanghai. His name is Evan Pinto. I don't mind saying that and plugging him. If anybody's coming to Shanghai and wants acupuncture, let me know. He is from New York. He has studied in the U.S., TCM in the U.S. and in China. I say super fluent because there is nothing that stops him speaking wise. And he's an incredibly effective acupuncturist. You feel something has happened after you're through his session. Wow. So
that's I love Chinese medicine. I love the mm-hmm. the I've had lots of treatments over the years, especially mm-hmm. acupuncture. I think it's great. It's herbal medicine can be disgusting. I mean, when I was studying, because you can get the pills,
yeah.
the powder, or the herbs themselves, and when I was studying, it's the only time I've ever had the herbs, and I got given kind of they were wrapped up in a thing, and they gave me the instructions on how to cook them up. And I came home and I put them in a big pot and I cooked them in a house stank for weeks, and I drank the brown liquid
mm-hmm.
and it was a hideous experience.
It,
you kind of have to go through it, and yeah. I'd probably go the pills or the powder at another stop. But it's still a very cool experience. And for me, the treatments always work. And I think having an open mind helps with that as well.
It does. Yeah. Well, we are essentially done. Oh my gosh. So we're talking 6 months now. I'm thinking, what is it? Oh, it's the end of August now. So we should say September, October, November, December, January, February.
February.
Do this again in February. In 2020. Oh my gosh.
That's frightening.
In futuristic time, 2020.
It's absolutely frightening.
It is. I never thought I would be in that year. Just nah. Weird. Weird, weird, weird. Are there any other questions you'd like to ask your future self?
Actually, there's only one question, and I think, and I don't know if anyone, if this really comes with language learning, or if it's, because I know often with other skills it happens, it's that aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that moment where you kind of, where it kind of just clicks and mm-hmm. you go, oh, I get it. And because it's everything else I've learned, it's, you kind of get to that moment where you almost, it becomes yourself in 6 months' time. And I don't know if I'll have it by then, but we can try. So that might be the one to ask in 2020 if there's been any aha moments.
Got it. I have a feeling you're going to have a few of them. But I know what you mean. There's that, when do you stop thinking about that you're talking in that language and just use it? Yes. Yeah, that'll be interesting. Yeah. Yay. Okay. I'm so excited. Okay. I've hinted at your podcast, but I haven't explicitly said anything about it. Do you want to, before we go, do you want to tell the listeners about it?
Oh, that would be great. So it's called Mandarin by Mistake. And it's effectively like me. I always say I hate the word journey, but it's me kind of putting out there my experience in learning Mandarin and attempting to make as many mistakes as humanly possible, and which I make lots of. So that's where it's at. I have an Instagram page, which is mandarin.by.mistake is my handle. Mm-hmm. The podcast is currently available through Podbean and iTunes. I am in the process of kind of expanding it to other platforms. Yeah. You have to bear with me because I'm not the most tech savvy person. And I use that as an excuse because that's just me being lazy enough not to learn about the technology.
Apple Podcasts gets you about 60% of the distribution. So you're doing good. Yeah.
So I think we're 15 episodes in.
Wow.
For a few months, and it's more so me unloading and unburdening my brain every couple of weeks.
It's great. And I love your mistake of the week. I think that really, really reminds people that it's not about the perfection, like you were saying. It's about the mistakes and learning from them. And I think that's a really good point to make every week.
And I have a good one coming up this week.
Yay!
So, those of you who are seeing this in 2020, it's episode 16 will have a good mistake. If you go back and have a listen to that one.
Fantastic. And for the listeners, Changing Scripts is going through a bunch of changes. So to be redundant. So this is going to exist on the YouTube channel pretty much the same day that we've made it. And if you have any questions, stephfuccio.com. I am a .com now, which is frightening.
Exciting.
Yeah.
I was on your website last week and it has everything all there in the one place, nice and easy to navigate.
Thank you. It still looks as ugly as can be, but I'm centralizing then organizing. I'm not a web designer, nor do I want to be one. But thank you for that. So thank you so much, Cam, for coming on. We will talk. Well, I'll probably talk to you sooner than this, but we'll talk on YouTube in February 2020.
Sounds good. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much to our guest, Cameron, for sharing his language learning story with us. I can't wait to follow up in 6 months' time. That'll be in February, so mark your calendars, to find out how differently he answers these questions then. For more Geopets podcast episode information or information on any of my other projects, including my co-hosted podcast of Creatively Complicated with Summer Rylander, please do go to stephfuccio.com. Or you can just type in Geopets in your podcast app. Again, please feel free to reach out to me with any questions, comments, or to volunteer to be a guest on the show. I'd love to hear about your language learning story or your story that would fit on any of our other shows that we have. As promised, here is Damon Castillo with his band, and the song this month is Sometime Guy from the Mess of Me album. DamonCastillo.com is the website you want to go to find out about his touring information in Central California and to listen to more of his music. Trust me, you will want to. Damon?
I've been wasting all of my time standing at the back of your line, trying not to lose my mind, yeah, when all I'll ever be is your sometime guy. Well, I've been waiting for my moment, I've been howling at the moon. I've been living with this torment, 'cause there's nothing else my heart can do. Well, I've been wasting all of my time standing at the back of your line, trying not to sometime guy. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I put my foot down like the man I am. string and make